We'll be taking a look at the Great Lakes and our wetlands here in Wisconsin. Next on the Ideas Network, Larry Mueller here. And I tell you what, we've got a couple of great guests to talk with us. Katie Bielfus is the Outreach Program Director with the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, recently named its 100 Wetland Gems in the State. And the association and the Society of Wetland Scientists are co-hosting an International Wetland Science Conference in Madison at the Monona Terrace, as a matter of fact, the week of June 21st. So we'll talk certainly about wetlands with her, as we will with Peter Annan, our other guest, environmental journalist, author of the book Great Lakes Water Wars. It's published by Island Press. Peter is a banquet speaker at the conference and will be speaking on June 23rd, former Newsweek correspondent and the associate director of the National Nonprofit Institute for Journalism and Natural Resources. So we're really pleased to have both of them with us today. And as we visit with them and you want to join in, please feel free. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Katie Bielfus with me in the studio. Katie, hi. Thanks for coming by today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Peter Annan with us by phone. Peter, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Happy to be with you, Larry.
You know, there's a lot of talk these days about whether and how to let local communities pull water from the Great Lakes to meet their water needs. And we have the Great Lakes Compact. It's a great agreement, historic agreement, I guess you could say, to protect our Great Lakes by managing a lot of things, water quantity, promoting water conservation and efficiency. That went into effect, I believe, last December. So obviously water, big deal for the Great Lakes, but it's also a big deal for our wetlands, whether they're coastal wetlands along the Great Lakes or inland, affected by water levels. Peter, what do you see as the contribution of the Great Lakes Compact to our lakes?
Well, what makes the compact so historic is that it is a ban on Great Lakes water diversions with very limited exceptions. And those limited exceptions fall into two main categories. One is straddling communities. Mm-hmm. You're a straddling community that sits on either side of the Great Lakes basin line, the watershed line. You have a right under the compact to ask for a Great Lakes water diversion to the half of town that sits outside the basin line. That doesn't mean you'll get approval, but under the compact you have a right to ask. You have to meet all these stipulations. You have to have a strong conservation program. You have to, most importantly, after you use the water, you have to agree to treat it to Clean Water Act standards and return it to the basin, et cetera, et cetera. And we have an example of one of those straddling communities here in Wisconsin, and that's New Berlin, a suburb of Milwaukee. The second exception under the compact for diversions is what's called the straddling county exception. So if you're same sort of thing, if you're in a county that straddles the basin line, you have a right to ask for Great Lakes water. Again, doesn't mean you're going to get it.
Right.
But you have to meet those same rules, regulations, stipulations, returning the water, conservation plan, et cetera. The difference is if you're in a straddling community, just your local governor signs off on your application. But if you're in a straddling county because you're farther away from the basin line, you have to get the approval of all 8 Great Lakes governors, so a much higher bar. And we have a straddling county potential applicant in Waukesha, Wisconsin, right near New Berlin. It's a community that's outside the basin, but in a county that straddles the basin, and Waukesha is anticipated to apply for a Great Lakes water diversion later on this year.
How do the Great Lakes impact, or do they have an impact on our wetlands?
Oh, yeah, they have a huge impact. I think one of the biggest tragedies is that we have a fraction of the wetlands that we had pre-European settlement left here in the Great Lakes region today. But the water levels in the Great Lakes fluctuate wildly always have over recorded history. And that can drive humans crazy. When you put your dock in the lake, doggone it, you want the water level to be at the same level all the time. But you don't have to be chasing the water level around. But in fact, these variable water levels infuse life into wetlands. They flood them out. There's a regeneration that occurs there, and then those water levels recede. And this is all part of the natural cycle in the Great Lakes region. And so we're just appear to be coming out of a period of low water levels, and now the water levels seem to be coming back up. And that's natural. It tends to be somewhat controversial in the scientific community, but it tends to be on a 30-year cycle. And again, we seem to be coming out of that. But the lakes play a huge role in regenerating these wetlands through these variable water level fluctuations.
And Katie Balfes, the wetland conference that's coming up is going to how does that relate to all this?
Well, there will be several sessions at the conference specifically geared toward Great Lakes wetlands and providing an opportunity for scientists who are studying those wetlands to get together and share the latest research and information on those wetlands and that science. So there certainly is a feature there. But generally speaking, the conference is an opportunity for scientists to come and share wetland knowledge from around the world. We have registrants for the conference from Taiwan and various countries in the Middle East and all around the world.
And are average people like me invited to attend at least parts of it?
Well, certainly. The conference is intended for a scientific audience, but both the Wisconsin Wetlands Association and the Society of Wetland Scientists have a strong commitment to involving the public in wetland science and broadening that discussion to include the public so that we can improve public understanding of some of the critical issues that wetlands are facing right now. So the planning team has come up with a number of events as part of the conference. Certainly, anybody who would like to attend the entire conference is more than welcome to do so, but we have also targeted a series of events specifically for the public, events that we felt would be of a more general public interest nature.
And we'll talk about that as we move along, but I want to give Judy a chance to join in, who's been waiting a while. You can join us, by the way, with your questions as we talk the Great Lakes and we talk our wetlands. The number 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Judy in Green Bay. Judy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I'm wondering if your guests have any information on the Senate bill that's being sponsored by Senator Feingold that would give the federal government the right for, I believe the term is takings, for any water, whether it be wetlands or fens or lakes or streams, including all that's on private property. If you know anything about this, I'm in my car, so I don't have the number of the Senate bill, but it's got fishermen fairly upset in the state, and I'd like to know if you know anything about it.
All right. Well, let's turn to Peter Annan first. Peter, are you familiar with that bill?
Yeah, if you Google this Feingold bill, and I haven't talked to the senator's office about it, and I have not read the legislation, but it's gotten essentially the right wing all up in arms, particularly in the West, as far as there's some sort of a takings allegation here. And I'm surprised to hear Judy say that there are fishermen upset, because there's some of the stuff that comes up is writings by places like Trout Unlimited, and there was an article in one of the fly fishing magazines in support of the legislation, saying that it would be really good for the environment. I don't know. Again, I haven't read the legislation. It's fairly new. But I would just caution people. There's a lot on the Internet about this that is not from what I would call reputable media organizations.
Okay.
So I would be very careful. This is the challenge today. As a journalist, I can assure you, this is the challenge today. You need to be really careful about what the source is of the information. Is it a legitimate source? Is it a balanced source? And is it an informed source? And I haven't seen a lot of coverage from what I would call legitimate media sources about this legislation. I'm sure it's coming, but Judy's right. There's a lot of expressions of concern out there on the Internet and the blogosphere, etc. I just don't know how informed they are, frankly. And I'm sorry, I haven't had a chance to do my homework on the legislation myself before the call. So,
Peter, is that the Clean Water Restoration Act? Is that the title of the bill, or just a different one?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
All right, Judy, thank you very much for calling. And I want to turn to Rich and Sullivan next, who has a question or comment. Rich, hello to you.
It's a political question related to water. Waukesha County, I believe, was created fairly recently out of Milwaukee County. I thought it was created sometime in the mid to late 50s or something like that. It separated from Milwaukee County. With that historical record, and also in terms of the details of the compact, are there any provisions to guard against counties joining other counties in order to qualify as part of a county that abuts the Great Lakes watershed? And also, wouldn't it be an easy way for Waukesha County, one of the wealthiest counties in Wisconsin — I worked there for 34 years, so I know what I'm speaking about — to share the wealth with Milwaukee County by rejoining Milwaukee County as part of a greater metropolitan area?
Well, that's an interesting question, a thought that I hadn't considered myself or heard about. Peter, a comment from you?
Yeah, actually, it's a really good question. I don't know about this history about Waukesha County branching off. I can't confirm that. I can't deny it either. But as far as this mission creep, which is what Rich is talking about, which I like to call it, is the drafters of the compact envisioned that. And so the straddling communities that we talked about and the straddling counties that we talked about, those borders cannot change. Or would not be — any changes would not be recognized by the governors in the Great Lakes region after the date of December 13th, 2005, when the final version of the compact was released. In other words, you can't change your boundaries if you're in New Berlin or in Waukesha County. I mean, you can change them, but you can't change them to get Great Lakes water. Those boundaries cannot move from a water perspective as of December 13th, 2005. It's a really good question.
It really is. You could have a state that's one county. Otherwise, Mark in Muscadet, it's your turn. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm from the Muscadet area, and we have an issue down there with the Balmoral Dam. The village of Muscadet owns the dam, and they've abandoned it due to financial reasons, and the DNR has taken it over. And by the end of the summer, they're tearing it down. They're destroying it. And my question is, with all the preservation of wetlands, this dam has survived the last 2 years flooding. Why? What's their intention by destroying dams, which there are hundreds of acres of wetlands behind it? What are their intentions, and what do you folks have to say about situations like this?
All right, well, let's turn to Katie first. Katie?
Well, I don't know this particular case, so I can't comment on why the DNR has made that particular decision, but I know it is an issue that has come up in a number of locations around the state as dams age and require a certain amount of renovation or reconstruction over time. And sometimes that's not it's not financially feasible, and it might not be the best investment to do. It's a tricky question because you do point out correctly that sometimes these dams create wetlands behind them, mm-hmm. but they also have downstream impacts and have since they were installed. So as we study wetlands around the state, we've actually been sort of struggling with how do we quantify wetland loss and wetland additions because of these dams. And it's a very tricky question that there's not really a right answer in terms of their creation of wetlands or not. So the DNR does excellent work in most of its cases, and we would support them in their efforts to manage that appropriately given the information that they have.
Yeah. Peter, any comment from you?
They're certainly a dam would create wetlands, but it probably impacted wetlands, particularly downstream, negatively. And so, again, I would defer to Katie on what the trade-offs would be. But there are other issues with dams, including things like fish passage. Walleye move upstream to spawn, so do lake sturgeon, et cetera, and the dam really essentially serves as a fence that cuts off wildlife from one part of the watershed to another. So there are a lot of... So if some of these old dams are no longer in operation, there's generally a feeling amongst wildlife managers and water managers that they should probably come out and return these rivers to their natural systems.
Thank you very much for calling, Mark. Appreciate your call. Talking today about the Great Lakes and about our wetlands here in Wisconsin with two guests, Katie Balfus, Outreach Program Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, be co-hosting the International Wetlands Science Conference on Monona Terrace in Madison the week of June 21st. Peter Annan, author of The Great Lakes Water Wars, will be one of the featured speakers at that conference, and really pleased to have both of them with us here today. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad you're along here on the Ideas Net as we visit with Katie Bialfus and Peter Annan about our Great Lakes and about our wetlands. You know, I sometimes think, although I think it's changing a bit, that there are some misunderstandings, and wetlands tend to be undervalued by some people. And I'd like to hear what both of you have. Katie, why don't we start with you, what both of you have to say about that.
Well, you're certainly right about that. Wetlands have a black eye in terms of natural communities that we know and love. People love rivers, they love lakes, they love streams. And wetlands sometimes get left off of that list, even though they're a critical component of all of those systems and making them healthy. They're, you know, have too many mosquitoes, or they're in the way of progress. You know, you can't farm them. But they do provide a number of very critical services to both our wildlife, which Peter has touched on earlier in this show, but also for human communities in terms of their ability to clean water, their ability to hold on to floodwaters and protect communities from floods. They're not a panacea, of course, but they certainly contribute to that. And they're beautiful places for us to recreate in addition to their wildlife they provide.
Mm-hmm. Peter, comment from you?
Yeah, they're sort of often called the nurseries of the Great Lakes region. It's where a lot of nesting areas take place. It's where a lot of spawning areas kind of things, and then and regeneration kind of a function in the regional ecosystems, not just in the Great Lakes region with all these rivers and lakes that we have in interior of Wisconsin. The greatest wetland, I think, crime in the Great Lakes region occurred in northwestern Ohio. There's a massive wetland there called the Great Black Swamp pre-settlement, which was a huge headache for settlers trying to move through Ohio and up into Michigan. And there's a video that the one of the universities in Ohio has produced about the Great Black Swamp, but it's essentially gone now, and it was this enormous, very productive wetland. I've heard it's one of the largest wetlands outside of the Everglades, and so, you know, the thing is about the wetlands, some of them get plowed under, and when they're gone, people, you know, generations later don't even know that they used to be there, and they do play a very important role in the whole Great Lakes ecosystem, but they are underappreciated because we can't go in there and pitch a tent or take a hike through them and that kind of a thing, and hopefully that's changing.
Let's take another call. Fern in Gilbert, Minnesota, will turn to you next. Hi, thank you for waiting.
This is a very interesting program to know in Minnesotans, because a 100-mile swamp is being threatened by sulfide mining. And the Forestry Service did a study of this swamp some years ago and reported that it's very unusual and there are a number of endangered species there. It's kind of interesting. The company is a Canadian one, PolyMet, and yet there's a Dr. Blows from the University of Waterloo who's made a study of Canadian sulfide mines, and all of them have problems. Obviously, PolyMet is looking to the advantage of taking over an LTV operation that went bankrupt so they can use their concentrator and tailings ponds and so on. But the best strategy we can think of is to, before the state and the Corps of Engineers hand out permits, is to sue under the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, and I'd like comments on that.
And this is a swamp in Minnesota.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Peter, a comment from you?
I this is the first I've heard about this, actually. And I don't even know, Fern, where is the 100-mile swamp?
It's in the area between White Lakes and Ely.
Oh, okay.
So way north.
You know, we faced sulfide mining before in the late 70s with AMAX, and they pulled out when the price of copper dropped, but it's not so likely to drop this time.
Yeah.
Fern, I had one suggestion. As part of our Wisconsin Wetlands website, which is wisconsinwetlands.org, we have a suite of web pages called Protecting Wetlands, which helps guide local citizen activists through what the decision-making processes are. Now, because we're a Wisconsin-based organization, there's a Wisconsin focus here, and it's also a wetland focus, but it might still provide some assistance to you in terms of understanding some of the processes that folks have to go through in Wisconsin in order to get permits that would affect wetlands or cause wetland fill. So there might be some suggestions there for you in terms of at what point you can insert yourself into the process to let your opinions be known in this regard.
Okay. And, Peter, anything else from you?
Nope, not on that one.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Fern, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your questions as we talk about the Great Lakes and about our wetlands with our two guests. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Cameron Davis, president of the Chicago-based Alliance for the Great Lakes, has been picked by President Obama as overseer of the Great Lakes, and he's going to coordinate the federal programs on the lakes. I think there's some efforts to clean up the contaminated sediments, reduce pollution sources, and then, of course, invasive species have played have been a real problem in recent decades. What do you think of Cam Davis, Peter Annan?
I think what's great about this whole thing is that, you know, in the Great Lakes region, we have been waiting for a Great Lakes president for, almost 100 years, I guess. Was William Howard Taft, was he the last Great Lakes regional president that we've had? And so here we have a president who not only is from the Great Lakes region, but is very personally connected with the Great Lakes, perhaps even more importantly, in a way, so is his chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel. And so the president campaigned on Great Lakes restoration, and one of the things that many people were pushing for was that he create a new position that has been affectionately referred to in the region as the Great Lakes Czar. And so Cam Davis, as you said, the president of the Alliance for the Great Lakes, definitely one of the hardest working Great Lakes environmental organizations, who knows the president personally, knows Rahm Emanuel personally, has been selected for this position. And the president, in his budget, has set aside $475 million for a Great Lakes restoration, and it would essentially be Cam's job to help decide where those cleanup areas are and how it goes and everything else. So it's a big job. It's long overdue. The NGOs in the Great Lakes region have been pushing for almost a decade now for up to $20 billion in Great Lakes restoration, and they haven't had a lot of luck getting it through Washington. And so this is hopefully the first big chunk of that money, and actually it's quite small when you look at the whole overall goal of $20 billion, but it's an unusually large chunk.
And a good start. And Katie, I'm sure
We just would like to join with Peter in appreciating having a president that wants to talk about the Great Lakes and wants to talk about wetland issues and wetland restoration there. So it's real refreshing to hear that, and we're looking forward to seeing what happens.
I understand that Davis and the president first met on a volunteer beach cleanup several years ago.
I think Cam is the right guy for the job, and he's got, you know, long-standing relationships with not just the environmental community, but also the agencies and even the business community. So he's the kind of person, I think, who can really pull things together.
Let's take another call. Steve in Rice Lake, it's your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say about a month ago you had some folks on talking about wetlands, and they turned me on to the Wisconsin Wetlands, and I applied for the little guide in the mail. I got a beautiful little spiral-bound guide in the mail and was really helpful in getting folks out to look at my project and okaying my project, and hopefully they're designing it now, and in a few more weeks I'll have it back and can start construction.
That's great news. Congratulations.
Oh, Thanks, Steve.
That's our Wetland Restoration Handbook, I assume you're talking about, which is available.
Yeah.
I think it's $5 to cover our shipping costs because we've partnered with the DNR to bring that and be able to share it with as many people as possible.
And how do we? How do other people get that, by the way?
You can call our office at 608-250-9971 or send us an email, programs@wisconsinwetlands.org.
All right. Thanks, Steve, for bringing that back to our attention. Appreciate it very much. Sounds like he's a...
he's a fan. I appreciate that. And I'll just throw out the website address as well. It's wisconsinwetlands.org. We have a lot of different wetland resources to try and support a number of different... both outreach and restoration and another science. It's all mm-hmm. over, all across the board there.
All right. Thanks again, Steve. Kurt in Chippewa Falls, it's your turn now. Hi, Kurt.
Thank you. I tuned in late, just at the end of when you were talking about the Waukesha Great Lake Michigan water situation. Could you tell us again what the current decision, the resolution of that situation, has the Great Lakes commissioners passed? Okayed whatever Wisconsin decided over there. What's the situation?
All right. Thanks for calling. Peter?
Yeah, well, the two things we talked about were the New Berlin straddling community water application, which is the first straddling community water application under the Great Lakes Compact. That has been approved by Governor Doyle last month, I believe. And so that's pretty much done, unless someone were to try and challenge it in court. But it's been, I think, pretty comfortably accepted by the environmental community in the region. There were some tough negotiations towards the end on water conservation, that sort of thing. So New Berlin, I think, is pretty much done. Waukesha, on the other hand, there's been a lot of talk about Waukesha. There's been a lot of in the press about Waukesha. I gave a presentation to the city council back in January to try to sort of talk about Great Lakes water diversion from 30,000 feet down to sort of put their interest in Great Lakes water in perspective. They have not, however, even applied for Great Lakes water yet. Mm-hmm. So there was originally some there was some talk about them applying by now. The latest I've heard is that's been postponed until the fall. And so it's important to realize that Waukesha's again hasn't even submitted an application. So we're a long way from action at all on the Waukesha front.
Okay.
Are they getting Milwaukee water?
Well, right now they're not getting anything but groundwater. But under their application, if they were to apply for Great Lakes water, they would get it through from Lake Michigan. And whether or not they get it from Milwaukee is still a question. There's some opposition to that in the city of Milwaukee, particularly from city council members. They've also looked at potentially getting the water from the city of Racine if there's a problem with getting it via Milwaukee, et cetera. So there's still a lot to be ironed out yet on Waukesha. We're going to continue to hear more and more about it. It's important, though, for people in Wisconsin to realize that this kind of activity is not happening in other Great Lakes states to this level. Wisconsin is really on the front line in this whole Great Lakes water diversion debate. And that's because there are a number of communities like Waukesha, New Berlin, in southeastern Wisconsin. The basin line, the area, the edge of the Great Lakes watershed is very close to the shoreline of the Great Lakes right there. And so there's not a lot of wiggle room as far as groundwater supply is concerned. And the groundwater there is naturally contaminated with low levels of radium, a naturally occurring radioactive element. So they're under federal and state pressure to find an alternate water source. Being close to Lake Michigan, that's their first choice. But whether or not they get it depends on whether or not they can put together a top-notch application to get approval.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Kurt, for calling. Appreciate your call. Dave in Madison, we turn to you next. Dave, hello.
Good morning. I got three quick questions. I'll hang up and listen to my answers. First question, now, with wetlands, is that kind of like a prairie? So, I mean, do you need to have like, prescribed burnings every once in a while? Second question, I thought I read or heard something that a Canadian province, a private company, is taking water out and bottling it for commercial use, and basically, is any of the Great Lakes being used by private companies for commercial use, such as either the water or like fish farming. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling. So three questions. The first sort of a basic question about wetlands, and let Katie, I'll turn to you for that.
Sure, that's fine. Certainly, prescribed burning is an important management tool for some wetland types. One of the issues about wetlands that's commonly misunderstood is that there's not just one kind of wetland. Wetlands come in all shapes and sizes. Some of them have trees, some of them have shrubs, some of them are open and grassland looking, some of them have standing water, and some of them don't. Wisconsin Wetlands Association has a list of 12 wetland types that we use in our outreach efforts to try and help bridge the gap of understanding there. So some of those wetland communities do need periodic fire to maintain them, and some of them do not. Mm-hmm. And so it depends on the kind of community type. And generally that has more to do with where it's located and what the historic context of that wetland was. So many of the wetland types that are more often found in a prairie-like environment, a wet prairie, for example, may need that kind of a management application now that we don't have wildfires, you know, loose on the landscape. We do it in a managed way.
And Dave also asked about a Canadian company taking water from the Great Lakes and bottling it. Maybe just sort of a general question is, Peter, does that sort of thing occur?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of companies that take water from the Great Lakes watershed and bottle it, and also the Great Lakes itself. But I think what he's referring to is actually an old, very controversial case from 1998. The Nova Group in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, had plans to ship tankers of Lake Superior water to Asia to try and create a water market, and that was. Very, very, as I said, controversial. In fact, it was the Nova proposal of 1998 that eventually pulled everybody together to retrofit the Great Lakes water management system and started the process that eventually led to the compact. So that's probably what Dave is talking about there.
Yeah, but there are, I think his other point was about our private companies using the Great Lakes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, private companies use the Great Lakes all the time. And the leading consumer of water in the Great Lakes is actually, Great Lakes region is actually agriculture. Certainly energy companies use water for cooling and cooling towers for power plants. I'm attending a conference in Milwaukee today, and the largest water user in the city of Milwaukee, I'm told, is Miller Brewing.
Sure.
So there's all sorts of industrial uses of water, and of course the secret for, I think, the future of the Great Lakes region is to continue to ensure that those are sustainable uses and that conservation is used and that there's, you know, definitely regulatory oversight that's making sure that things fall within the Clean Water Act and that we've got, again, sustainable quantity methods as well.
And how much of the water in the Great Lakes is renewed every year?
Yeah, that's a really I think, highly unknown and underappreciated fact. So you've got 20% of all the fresh surface water on the face of the planet right here in the Great Lakes Basin. That's enough water to cover the entire lower 48 states in nearly 10 feet. So
wow.
That's a heck of a lot of water.
That's a lot of water.
But only 1% of that water, just 1%, is renewed annually through rainfall, snowfall, and groundwater recharge. So think of the lakes as this gift from the glaciers 10,000 years ago, and this sort of 1% of water interest flows through that water bank account annually. So we need to, you know, appreciate the fact that these are glacial lakes and that they are fragile, and we only have 1% renewal every year.
And Katie, I wanted to go back to you for a couple of minutes to talk about the Wetlands Connections, the conference, the joint meeting of the Society of Wetland Scientists, Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Wetland Biogeochemistry Symposium. It's June 21st through the 26th in Madison at the Monona Terrace, and there are some public events, and particularly Peter will be speaking at one of the events.
Yeah, we're delighted to feature Peter as the banquet speaker on Tuesday evening at 6:30 at the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center in the community room, the community terrace. So that's, tickets for that are $35 and includes a beautiful dinner prepared at Monona Terrace. And we are selling those tickets now. The best way to get those tickets is to come to our, well, to call our office, first of all, 608-250-9971. Or if you prefer, you can download a registration form on the website. If you go to our website, wisconsinwetlands.org, and click on the beautiful crane logo for the conference, that'll take you into the conference web pages. And there's a public events section of those web pages that has all the details about. We have six separate events that are open to the general public. Peter's banquet presentation is one. There's two other conference plenary sessions, one by George Archibald, who's a co-founder of the International Crane Foundation, speaking on the status of the world's wetlands as reflected by cranes. And this, that's Monday, the 22nd, from 4:30 to 5:30. And then Dr. Ray Sumlich, who's a professor at the University of Missouri, will speak on hidden biological values, headwater streams, isolated wetlands, and terrestrial connections. That session is Thursday morning, the 25th, from 9 to 10 in the morning.
And Peter, what will you be speaking on? What's your topic?
Well, it'll be an update on the compact and where things are standing. We'll talk about you know, the future of Great Lakes water diversions now that the compact's been passed. I'll spend a little bit on the history of the, some more controversial water diversions, like the NOVA proposal that we already talked about up in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, and of course the infamous diversion at Chicago and other things. But a lot of it'll be updating on where things stand now that the compact's been adopted.
And again, for more information, go to that website or call 608-250-9971 to get into the banquet and that sort of thing. And the website again is?
If we go to wisconsinwetlands.org, mm-hmm. and right at the top of our website is a link to the conference. It's a simpler website address than the one I'd have to read for the conference, so it's the easier way to refer people there. I wanted to point out that two of the public events offer you an opportunity to actually get out and enjoy wetlands in the Madison area, which now that we're dealing with beautiful spring weather, if the rain can hold off, might be something people might be interested in doing. So there'll be a field trip at the UW Arboretum, which is celebrating its 75th anniversary this year. That'll be Sunday morning at 8:30, and that's a free tour of the wetlands of the UW Arboretum. And also on Sunday in the afternoon, we have a workshop called Wetland Gems to Poetic Gems, Celebrating Wisconsin Wetlands with Poetry. And that'll be held out at Wabisa Wetlands, although we're meeting at the Monona Terrace to go out on that workshop. But it's an interesting bringing
sounds
together
like
of science and science and the arts with poetry in the wetlands, and it's a beautiful place. So,
Peter and Katie, thank you so much. Peter, thank you so much for being with us today. By the way, what's your opinion of the new Newsweek?
Oh, yeah, it's a thinner version of its old self, and it's a tough time for media organizations right now. And of course, I wish them well, but it's not what it used to be.
No, it sure isn't. Peter, Adam, thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
And Katie Balfus, thank you very
much. It was my pleasure. Thank you, Larry.
Thanks for being with us today. Katie Balfus, Outreach Program Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, that conference coming up the week of June 21st. Peter Annan, environmental journalist, author of Great Lakes Water Wars, will be a banquet speaker at the conference on June 23rd. And former Newsweek correspondent, by the way. That's why I asked that question. So really pleased to have both of them with us. And go to their website, Wisconsin Wetlands Association website, or call 608-250-9971 to see how you can get involved in it. We're going to continue talking about water, but we're going to turn our attention this time to the Upper Mississippi River and Reggie McLeod, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine, our guest coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.